Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Stefano Bussaro, Matt Doyle. He's back. Kalen Carr. I felt, you know, a little throaty for you. I just feel a little jacked up, Kalen. Yeah. It's been months.
I could feel the energy coming in. So that was great.
Where have you been?
Longtime listener, loyal listener.
You are a
Tom
loyal
has
listener.
Been carrying the torch for the Golden Boot Squad. You guys have been trying to fudge the numbers. Don't think I haven't been paying attention to that. So I've come back, given Tom the day off.
Wow, just scandals, controversy off the top from Kalen Carr.
Coming in hot. Let's go.
He's got receipts. By the way, happy birthday. You tried to hide it from the 360 crew on Wednesday night, match day 36, come and gone. They got you with the birthday cake. And look, we know two things. One, you're officially washed. Utterly washed.
I've retired from playing like five times now. Like men's league. I was like, I can go back again. So
you were napping during the pre-production meeting, like just to clear the air on
and that
one.
Wasn't the first nap you had today.
Well, that's on y'all. Sorry.
I do have a birthday gift for you, though.
Wow.
I hope that, you know, I'll just break this out for you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
we've got the
yes. Orca hat. It's not for you. You're going to sit next to me while I wear it for the show.
Oh, that's my gift.
Proximity to this orca hat. It's the closest you'll ever get to an orca.
That's fair.
From the area you just pulled that hat out of, I think I'm good with that.
Man,
I appreciate the thought.
Fair enough.
The thought that
fair
counts.
Enough.
Man, that's even sweeter to see in person.
Hey, by the way, Seattle Sounders.
Connor Close, thank you so much.
Sounders 1-0 since they re-emphasized their orca. So that's less
Christian Roldan back on the score sheet. Coincidence.
Yeah, for people who cannot watch this because I think most people are probably listening to it. Maybe just put on the Sounders' new secondary logo hat.
Yes, the orca with the soccer ball.
Yeah. And it's a kind of a happy, kind of an angry orca. He's a fine line, man. Yeah.
He's always
all right. Anders assures me that orca is very angry. So, yeah.
I think orcas live on the edge, whether it's a boat coming through the Straits of Gibraltar or a ray that just needs to get slapped with a tail. Like they're just ready to handle business when the time comes.
He's all over the shop, though. He's wearing a Jayhawks t-shirt and an orca hat, which is definitely the first time this combination
has
ever happened.
Well, to be fair, it's two mythical animals you'll never get close to.
That's true.
So, all right, cool. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. You also note my graciousness. David Goss is on vacation, and I'm only mentioning now and congratulating on him for a wonderful time.
Yeah, you're happy for him, unlike you, who gets roasted every time.
That's true. I don't know how that happens. Oh, by the way, I'm going to Lisbon, so this is my
I wonder what'll happen on the show next
for
week.
For a couple of weeks. Treat me with kid gloves, please. Best thing we saw on match day 36. Kalen, you're back. We're happy to have you. Do the honors.
Best thing I saw was some of the teams at the bottom or of the fighting for the playoffs, let's say. What was the term you used?
Peloton of mediocrity.
The peloton of mediocrity. That's,
I like that.
That's great. Some of them started to wake up finally. And I've been watching, you know, traveling around doing some of these matches and seeing some of these teams and waiting for the panic button to be hit. And we haven't seen it as of yet. I thought that would happen maybe with 10 games left. That was probably optimistic. Then it was 5. Now it's down to 3, so you can see the end. But I, you know, there was a big response. Red Bull had just lost to Chicago at home. You see the response. Yes, I know Cincinnati celebrating still the shield and rotated the lineup.
There's nothing like winning the supporter shield.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
That just blows up your whole week.
Doyle is also every year he wins the supporter shield.
You think Cincinnati's going to even show up for the playoffs or just call it good?
I think they're going to continue to push. He's but Montreal also 90+6 fight. Lapalainen able to get the equalizer that saved them. Honestly, that would have been a brutal loss that could have seen them out. Trying to think who else in the Chicago, huge result at home in front of 60,000 plus in Soldier Field. That was amazing. Shaqiri stepped up, Haile Selassie as well, but the whole team, that was a huge response. So finally starting to see some of that panic being hit, except for DC. That was the one where you're like, oh, I expected them on the road in Austin to try to fight their way and give them some chance because they only have one game left. But I was pleased to see at least some of these East teams just hitting that panic button and showing some response.
Charlotte supporters right now listening, hand up. Hey, guys, we beat Toronto FC. Yes. Is that good?
Hey.
Yeah, it was a decent win. They got their fate in their hands the rest of the way.
Why does Charlotte fans sound that way?
I don't know. they're just trying to poke in. It's not really an accurate representation. Right. I really don't know where
I thought you had some like very strange
interaction. Like, the guy poking his head up being like, "Hey, you forgot about me." Like we had like a win
cartoon.
Too. Yeah. Okay. I can't explain this at all. Doyle, I'll just throw it to you here. What's the best thing you saw?
Building on what Kalen said, the Fire had a record crowd in this game, and we all know why they had a record crowd. And like Tata Martinez had some pretty fun comments today about like, oh, any other league in the world, you don't have to explain, you know, why the player is not playing to away fans, and you know this only happens in America.
Hold on.
He also said it only happens with this player,
and it only happens with this player.
No, that's
incorrect.
It's absurd.
Any other league in the world, a player of Messi's caliber, and again, there's only one player of Messi's caliber, but like we're talking a superstar player. If Mbappe isn't playing on the road in Troyes, there's going to be a segment of Troyes fans who are like, oh man, I really wanted to see Mbappe. And the other thing to understand here is that there are so many more fans of Lionel Messi at this point than there are of any MLS club, right? There are more Messi fans out there than there are Chicago. So those were Messi fans who had forked over a good amount of money to go see this game. The Fire took advantage of having a packed house. There was a lot of red in that crowd, right? There was not as much pink as I thought there was going to be. And maybe that's a lot of people sold on the secondary market. But there's a lot of Fire fans and they put forth their best performance of the season. Jordan Shaqiri showed up. He had a brace. I thought he worked hard. I thought Gaston Jimenez in central midfield. In fact, Gaston Jimenez pressed his way to creating the fourth. Gaston Jimenez pressed. Like all this stuff that we've been bagging on the Fire about for years, it all went away. In this 90 minutes, they absolutely smoked Miami. They were the better team. I thought even in the first half before going up, I thought they had much more control of the game. Again, Shaqiri and Jimenez playing two-way in central midfield. You don't see that from them a lot. Chris Brady continuing to be strong in goal. And then the floodgates open in the second half. And that crowd was into it. And the Fire, give them credit, right? They knew that a lot of those people were there to see Messi. And when it became clear earlier in this week that Messi was not going to play, they ran a promo. I don't remember. Do you remember exactly what the promo was?
Yeah, you had two options. I believe the options were you could apply a credit to tickets for next year for a single game, or you could apply a larger credit to buy season tickets. And I believe that credit was a couple $100.
Yeah, it was not insignificant.
There was, I think, yeah.
275 maybe? Like, I thought, don't put me on the spot here.
So it's definitely around there.
Yeah, sorry for putting you on the spot like that. But like I thought it was a good promotion. And the Fire, ever since Kalen Carr left, have been cursed, right? For the past 13 years, this team's only made the playoffs three times. They're on 40 points now, up to eighth place with this win. This is only the third time in a decade that they've had as many 40 points in a season. Everything that could have gone bad with the Chicago Fire basically since 2010 has. And on this night, right, it was a bit of bad luck, I think, from a marketing perspective that Messi didn't play. It's a good thing from a sporting perspective. We can all agree with Tata on that part of it. But then on top of it, they finally had good luck. Shaqiri was awesome. The midfield was great. Their young homegrown goalkeeper was fantastic. Like it all came together and the fans were eating it up. And it gave me flashbacks to what the Chicago Fire were and hopefully could be again. So, and I was happy to see it.
Okay. I'm going to play the foil here with Doyle, which is very uncomfortable for me because it usually goes the other direction as far as the positivity meter. But I mean, this season for the Fire has still been a disaster. They lost their manager, who I thought wasn't really given the time or the platform to really build things. Frank Lopez has tried to take over, reestablish some of the culture. It has not worked. Like, the back half after Leagues Cup has been a complete disaster. It's really more of an indictment on the entire Eastern Conference that the Fire are even within reach of the playoffs at this point. It's been really a struggle, right? But there was something that made you forget about it just for that moment. And I don't want to undervalue what happened yesterday, because that did feel big and a real opportunity. Because when I played for the Fire, we opened up the new stadium in Bridgeview, and I would meet people all the time in Chicago that would be like, where's Bridgeview? Where is this stadium? I used to go to games when it was at Soldier with my dad or with my mom or whoever, and we would, you know, be a part of it. And those were legendary teams, right? Those, that 98 team that did the double, 2003 back to MLS Cup, four already US Open Cups. So we had to earn people to come out to Bridgeview. And you have to earn that to get the fans to come out. Getting Cuauhtemoc Blanco, that helped. That brought in some people, winning trophy that first year. We won the Open Cup that first year, Eastern Conference Final. But it was year after year after year. And that's what the Fire have had the opposite of, right? So this felt like a good opportunity to say, for whatever reason you're here, we're going to try to earn your fandom. I don't care if you came in what jersey, Argentina jersey, a Miami jersey, a Chicago Fire jersey. I was most happy to see like the vintage kits of Section 8, and because they're showing up every week over the years.
Those CJ Brown kits just warm your heart.
I mean, CJ, the fact that they're involved, CJ, Zach Thornton, Frankie Klopas, like that group has tried to kind of reestablish that tradition, honor, passion that was in the locker room and you see every day that's gone missing. So it did show up for a day. It did feel big, but they have to continue to build on this. That's a longer journey that I think is still ahead of them. But for that day, it felt really, really big to have an opportunity, if you get hot at the right time of the season, to get in the playoffs, just to get a little bit of the stank off of these last 5 years of not making the playoffs. Like, if they could get in, that would be huge. And I felt like
they control their own destiny.
Now they have a chance.
So I'm not to agree with you. I don't think that this year is anything short of a disaster for the Fire, but for one night, it wasn't. For one night, basically everything broke their way. And it's been a long time since it felt like that. I mean, we talk about bad luck and like going back to Bridgeview. They built the stadium there because there were plans in Chicago to extend mass transit all the way out past Midway to that stadium. That never, like, that a new mayor got elected and that fell through. Like, that is the ultimate bad luck. And like, it's been almost a decade and a half of that for the Fire. So for one night, felt different.
I feel like they could all, I mean, I don't know. Can we call it a full-on disaster if they're in a playoff spot? I understand, and I agree that it's been a rough watch, the Chicago Fire team, all season long. They've had some things where it's just, you kind of leave games after watching them with your mouth open, like, what the hell did I just watch? But they're in the playoffs. They've played a couple of good games and got a couple of results here recently. And I just want to say shout out to the fans, because it would have been so easy for these fans to just not show up. Messi's not there and whatever. They showed up. It was a great atmosphere. Did they add like a section or like an area where there's usually not seats? Did I see that right? Or whether they did or not, it was a packed house and it was a great atmosphere to see. I've done a couple games there this year and it's been brutal. It was awesome to see that stadium packed and really enjoying their soccer, and got to see their team blow out Inter Miami.
You saw Shaqiri with a smile on his face afterwards in an interview saying, oh man, this is what it can be like, huh?
Yeah.
And I'll put some of this on Shaqiri.
Yeah.
You know, there's a reason why fans aren't there. It's a performance by the entire team, but is he the highest paid player in the league? If he's not the highest paid, I think Insigne, before that, he was
probably number three.
He's on 5-5 this year.
Yeah.
That's not good enough.
Yeah.
That's not the, yeah, that's not the burden that they expected him to carry when they signed him. And oh, by the way, I know we're positive now, but this is the Keystone Cops Chicago Fire. They might be on 40 points above the playoff line. Charlotte at home at NYCFC, control their own destiny. But these fans know what happens when you step on the rug. It gets pulled out from under you with the Fire.
Yeah, I don't think anybody sitting up here would be shocked if they took 0 points from the final two games, even though of the teams in the East hunt, I think NYCFC are probably in the best form. Chicago are probably second best right now. But they, it's still the, like, we are familiar with your work, Chicago Fire. Yes. We know how this ends. We've seen it time and again. And even if they make the playoffs, let's say they host, wouldn't be shocked if they lost. If they, you know, host a playoff or play-in game and win, then they face Cincinnati. Good luck. You know, see you in the offseason. I, whatever happens, it's heading to a massive teardown and rebuild in winter, I think. I'm talking players, maybe front office. It feels like front office has been there, you know, and gotten more than their fair share of time. But again, for one night, it was like, That crowd was awesome, man. And like, I'm old enough to remember, I'm not saying this facetiously, it's like, I am literally old enough to remember when the Fire had the best or second best fan base in this league and used to look forward to watching, as a neutral, to watching games in Soldier Field because it would be a spectacle and it felt like that again.
It's also what the Messi effect can do when he's not even in the building.
Yes.
And so I was even thinking about some of the young guys like Brian Gutierrez or Chris Brady. Young guys that are homegrown players and you think about the future of the Fire are people that you can really build around and have really big talent. And I think about what we've seen from Drake Callender, how his profile has really raised, or Kromoski, or these young players that are in MLS and growing in the league, but maybe now have this new spotlight on them. And so even if Messi wasn't there, if you're a Fire, if you live in Naperville and you drove in and you're like, oh, Chris Brady's 19 from Naperville, like I didn't know about you. I wasn't familiar with your work. Like, now you're starting to see more and more like some of this talent showing up. And you know, they have this next match is at home against Charlotte, so you know, if you want to redeem your ticket, show back up, keep that energy around. Like, I would urge people to keep supporting this team, and you could tell that it definitely, you know, inspired the team and made a big difference.
We'll talk more about Miami. Obviously, Messi not there, as we've stated, and their playoff hopes seem to be on life support right now. Steph, what do you got? Best thing?
LAFC coming back to life. It had been four straight games with no goals in all competitions, which is just kind of shocking just to think about that with LAFC. They come back, they whoop the Loons 5-1. Now, we talked about this in the pre-show, right? Denny Bouanga, it's kind of been him or bust for this team, especially these last couple months after League's Cup. He comes in, he gets a hat trick. He's awesome for them again. I don't know if it's kind of foreshadowing that this team, okay, they're kind of back and they're going to be this team that's going to be a force to be reckoned with in the playoffs. I don't know that yet because so much of it is dependent on Bouanga, but I think it was massive for them to kind of turn this around because it's been a struggle. It's been tough to watch LAFC the last four games, which is, it just doesn't make sense to me when you're saying it. But for them to have that type of win in this moment to, you know, to close out the season and get to the playoffs, I thought was big for them and maybe pushes that momentum. And look, we could say what we want about LAFC and how much they've struggled. If they're playing like that and if Bouanga's in that type of form, they could 100% still battle for MLS Cup.
Denny Bouanga has 30 goals in all competitions, 17 in the league. He's the Golden Boot leader after the hat trick. I believe with one over Lucho Acosta.
Yeah, he's
right
one ahead
now.
Of him. Yeah.
Seven, I want to say, in CONCACAF Champions League, and then six in League's Cup. 30 goals. Now, think back to how many goals Carlos Vela scored in a single MLS season.
Yeah.
Wild.
What on earth? Every time I look at these numbers and think, oh my God, 30 goals, and then remember past numbers, it blows me away. That's not the Vela that we have now. It's a different player. But Bouanga is really taking a huge step in his career.
Bouanga's been fantastic this year. I think there have been like solid months at a time where he's been the best player in the league. And that's great. And LAFC, to Stefano's point, they need him to keep being that, but they need Vela to find a little bit of the old magic. He's never going to be what he was in 2019. 34 goals, 15 assists in 2019. And to put that in perspective, remember those first 11 games from Messi? It was the League's Cup and that Open Cup semifinal, and then one or two regular season games as well. In that 11 games, Messi, everyone's saying Messi's breaking the league. He's showing how bad MLS is. Messi had 11 goals and 5 assists in those 11 games. You put that over the course of a full MLS season, that's 34 goals and 15 assists.
Wow.
Carlos Vela did that in 2019. It was amazing. I don't think it's even his goals that they need. I think they need the playmaking. I think they need him to be the final ball provider, not just for Buonga, but for Oliveira as well. And if Gonzalez gets out on the field, you know, true number nine, I think that would help them. I understand Steve Cherundolo looks really hesitant to do that because it means pushing Vela back out to the wing where he hasn't been, like, he can't really do it anymore. Go ahead, Stefano.
It's almost like, and they're not going to do this, but it's almost like, wouldn't he be better at this point in his career as like a second striker behind Buonga, behind a Mario Gonzalez?
4-2-3-1 in front of a double pivot. Just put him in the Reynoso role where it's like, we're not going to ask him to defend, man.
He doesn't have the speed on that wing anymore. He doesn't have the speed to have the pace to go down the wing, cut inside on the left foot and do that anymore. I mean, it's just not, he's not the same guy. And he's had the assists this year, so we know he can be a creator. We've seen him do it. They're not going to switch formations at this point. I highly doubt that, but I feel like that would probably be a better role for him moving into the playoffs.
I mean, especially. More runners in front of him is a better thing.
Yeah.
Create space for him to receive and then to have options. He still has that passing vision, ability, technique.
It's like Kalen Carr in men's league, man.
Just picking passes.
Retired. Again.
We know you.
You'll be back.
All right. For me, we've got a list. First of all, John Herdman says, I was going to take over Toronto at the beginning of October, but gosh, I've got second thoughts on that.
Yeah.
And to that, I say, John Herdman, very smart man.
Good job.
Very smart man.
Hang those L's on poor Terry. Exactly.
I've literally been saying this for like since we found out that he was going to take this job and, I'm going to hang out for a month and then take the job in early October. Why?
Yeah.
Why would you do that? This team is, you're going to get those losses on your resume. Just take it easy. You got the job. Figure out how you're going to build your team and let whoever, you know, let the interim guy in charge, you know what I mean? Let him take over and finish this season. Why would you do that to yourself?
Couple pats on the back for Terry Dunfield. Hey, Terry, you've been there, man. Like, I'll watch from the box, which is what happened. Toronto FC got blown out, obviously, by Charlotte. I'll shout out to Breck Dagre. I think I did that right.
Isn't it the Chagare?
Not even close, says Anders. You don't think so?
A little too hard, maybe.
Yeah, I went really leaned into that one.
Brett the heel de Chagare.
De Chagare?
Yeah,
nailed it.
Chagre. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, we're getting there. Would like to have a full pronunciation from Brecht in my inbox tomorrow. We'll see if Charlotte can abide that. The heel flick goal.
Insane.
What?
Sweet.
The scorpion blind, like around the back. Perfect contact
and weighted it perfectly.
Yeah, what?
Yeah, it was perfect.
So ridiculous.
Top five goal in the league this year.
Yeah,
I went definitely. Through. So I got the list in my head.
Oh, all right.
So it's Lucho's Maradona tribute from a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's Almada's absurd free kick from like 35 yards that everybody thought was
across. That was like first couple games.
That was in March, I want to say. Pablo Ruiz from midfield.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The João Klaus volley from last week.
Sweet.
That was absurd.
Yeah.
And then this one. I think that's my five. Anders is arguing for Zeller Ryan from midfield, but I don't think so.
These goosebumps, man. Read me a list every show. Just give me a list. I have shivers.
Now he wants to think about that for the next show he's on.
Doyle, like let me just, now. You are limitless. When you get a list in you and you just, you're okay, limitless. Wilfred. And so are the Columbus crew. That is my best thing I saw or heard. Wilfred Nantse, what a motivator he is. After a 2-1 win in New England, the first loss at Gillette of the year for the Revs, Wilfred Nantse must have decided his buzzword, his narrative, whatever it was going to be the word limitless. And all the players were saying it, we're limitless. We can do this. What a motivator he is. That's a couple games in a row for the crew playing on the margins. And that was a big question mark for this Columbus team. Especially after that heartbreaking loss to Orlando. Could they close out games? When it was tight, when it was playoff conditions, would they fold? And they haven't. And not only did they not, they were the ones that came out on top in those marginal moments in New England. So that was a big one for the crew. We'll talk about the East in just a second. Let's hit the West, though, because the playoff dam finally broke. It was just St. Louis City with the X, which then turned to a Y. For the home field advantage and first seed before any other team had booked a spot in the playoffs. It was just St. Louis at the top. Meanwhile, seven in the East had booked their spot in the postseason. Over the course of the night on Wednesday, Seattle, LAFC, Houston, Vancouver, and RSL all booked their spot in the playoffs. Big thanks to Minnesota United for getting blown out by LAFC. That kind of set it all up. Which qualification was most impressive, Doyle? Like in a vacuum, beginning of the season, you look at this list. which one would impress you the most?
Vancouver. Just because it felt early on like things weren't going well and Brian White was finding chances and he wasn't putting them away. They were playing that 4-3-2-1 Christmas tree, which was functional in certain areas, but it ended up costing them, I think, some attacking dynamism. So they switched to the 3-5-2, well, 3-1-4-2, put everything on Kubas's shoulders, winning the ball, progressing the ball, like asking him to be a complete monster in central midfield, push Gault forward as a true second forward, right? Like he's no longer dropping into midfield to be a creator, change their build out patterns, add multiple pieces during the summer. First of all, they won Canadian Championship, then traded away Julian Gressel, who's one of the best wingbacks in the league. They found a...
But they weren't playing him at wingback.
Right. Yeah.
Which is partly why it didn't fit. I think that they switched the tactics and formation, right?
So it was all over the shop, and then they start playing well mid-season, and White starts putting the ball in back of the net, and Gault like a fish to water being a second forward. And then we get to the point 6 weeks ago, we're like, oh man, they're gone for an entire month. They have to play 7 road games in a month. By the time this thing is over, they're going to be back below the playoff line. It's just too much. And they take 11 points from a 7-game trip, come back home, fall on their faces last weekend against DC United, only take a point in that game. And it's like, I think they're in, but they have the 3 top teams in the Western Conference. The remaining games, as of the other day, were St. Louis, Seattle, and LAFC, who are the 3 top teams in Western Conference. It's like, this could still all fall apart for the Quakes, or for the Caps, rather. And they went out there, and granted, St. Louis had rotated a bit, but they go out there, they lose Kubas, and they still absolutely smashed St. Louis City. And this felt like one of those classic St. Louis City games where it's like their opponents are, you know, leaving some goals on the board, they're creating chances, and St. Louis is escaping by the skin of their teeth. And it's like, at halftime, I was like, the door is open here, man. Like the Caps are going to lose this, because this is the type, like this is some... St. Louis has ended up on the right side of this result so many times this year, and Vancouver buried them in the second half. And I didn't really see any of that coming. Like everything I just listed, I did not see any of it coming.
That St. Louis beat them earlier in the year in St. Louis, but no João Klaus in that match. Right. Similarly, who he was injured at that point, but rested in this one. But yeah, you could see the way that they play, especially with you're talking about the tactical change and the different setup, where when they get out in direct play and they let Ryan Gault and Brian White out in space, it is one of the most dangerous 1-2 punches in MLS. Yeah, they just in space, Ryan Gault is just a menace, and anything that they find with White as well. I mean, I think he has 8 goals from ahead, from scoring headers, which most in MLS, more than Benteke, more than anybody else, 15 now on the season. But it was actually interesting to me that it was his first touch with his head that created his goal, where he just cuts right in front of, I think it was, who's the...
was it Parker?
Yarrow. It was right in front of Yarrow, and he heads it and puts it right in space, and then lovely little chip on the turf at full speed, showed some composure. So, they look dangerous, a team that I think you could see this matchup in a playoffs, and you could see how Vancouver could hurt St. Louis, even when they're not rotating the squad and when they have everybody available. But the Kubas thing is dangerous.
Yeah. Did he came off?
Yeah. He came off.
Shoulder injury?
Yeah. Around the 50th, 55th minute. It's not clear, and we haven't had it officially confirmed whether it's shoulder or wrist, and whether it's long-term or had like a stinger. He looked like he was in a lot of pain. Seb Berhalter came in for him. And
scored a goal?
It's scored a goal, and he's been the backup defensive midfielder all year. Seb Berhalter, he's a very good young player. Kubas is elite.
Yeah. For St. Louis, a weird game for them. You get home field advantage the first seed, so understandable that you go to Vancouver and rotate on short rest. I got that from Bradley Carnell. The thing with St. Louis this year has been that even when they've rotated or been forced to rotate or had guys injured, the next day I always stood up and you saw what they wanted to do on the field. The principles were still the same. I thought Bradley Carnell afterward was a little frustrated, and an insightful quote from him basically saying, we didn't play to those principles. And that would be just a little bit of concern for me if I was St. Louis. Now you use this long break because they don't play against till decision day. I think against Seattle at home, with that break, with the preparation for the playoffs, you've got to go out there and approach that like it is a playoff game. Get back to that urgency, intensity, physicality, try to get back on a high to push back in the playoffs. And I think recognize that what Vancouver did and can do in transition has kind of been the Achilles heel for St. Louis all year long. So some things to think about for St. Louis after this game. We'll get to the Houston Dynamo, because that would have been my like easy,
same,
quick answer as far as who would qualification be most impressive. I want to stay on Ryan Gauld and Brian White. We're going to do the best attacking duos in the league. Ryan Gauld has 11 goals, and I think, is it 11 assists?
I think got one last night.
Yeah. 12 now, and I think they're all primary assists. Mm-hmm. It helps when you can whip the ball up into the box to Brian White's head. That is very helpful, but Gauld's service is extremely good, and he thrives, as he said, in transition. Brian White, 15 goals and 4 assists. Gauld MVP, hashtag Gauld MVP is... it's got to be trending, because we had two boxes full of stuff here. And Kalen, we joked off the top, we didn't have a present for you, but we do have actually a box for you to unbox on the show.
I'm not falling for this again, man.
This actually, if you can see here, this actually says Kalen Carr right here on it. So Kalen, do the honors, the Gauld MVP swag box, thanks to Vancouver. It's a beautiful box. You know, they're
right here. Hard time opening.
It's just a box. Open that bad boy up. Oh, okay. Tell the people what you have in here. This being a podcast and all.
This is incredible. So Doyle, you're going to especially appreciate this. It's a hat. Oh, you want to read this for me?
Stefan? Working class MVP Ryan Gauld, and it's a trucker hat. The true.
I love that
trucker hat with the mesh on the back.
Wow.
They have two postcards in here, little note cards, really. Quotes from Ryan Gauld. I've never been a flashy kind of guy. I think that just comes from my upbringing. It's a team game at the end of the day. That's and that great. has all of the defensive stats for Ryan Gauld.
Nice.
Ryan Gauld. That one actually has the offensive stats for him. Let's go to the defensive stats with him. 58 tackles, which is 22nd in MLS. Very far ahead of any of the number 10s. 32 blocks, which is 46th in MLS. Way out ahead of all the other number 10s. 23 aerial duels won, and he's not a big guy. Hany Mukhtar, Lucho Acosta, Thiago Almada combined for 11. 19 tackles.
Scrubs.
19 tackles, one in the attacking third. First in MLS. More than twice as many as Lucho Almada or Hany Mukhtar. And this one has a quote from Brian White on the back. You can see from the games how much dirty running he does for the team, how much work he does off the ball. I'll point out that...
this is sick.
Moving him to a second forward spot actually allows him to do that running, because you have still three midfielders behind him. Yep. Yeah, the structure.
This is so sick that you would put together an MVP box for Ryan Gauld, and all the quotes are like the buzzwords are like dirty work,
hard
work,
and
like a quote it from rules. Gauld who's like, working I just class. I'm here for the team.
At times you don't see that from a lot of DP players. This is Brian White talking about Gauld. At times you don't see that from a lot of DP players. Sometimes they just want to go get the ball, go play offense, whatever it may be. But from him, you get both sides of the ball, 110% every game, all game. Again, it's like Kalen Carr in men's league. Incredible.
That sounds more like Tom Bogert in men's league, if I'm being honest about that one.
I don't think Tom's...
fitness levels?
Well, fitness levels, and I don't think he has an attacking...
He doesn't do it on both sides.
It says in the note, what separates the Gauld father is what he brings on both sides of the ball.
The Gauld father.
And then there was also, they were calling him Batman and Robin, right? And then Vanni Sartini came out with this quote. He said, I don't like this thing because Batman is the worst superhero ever. He's just a spoiled rich kid that defends capitalists. Please don't call them that because I hate Batman.
Wow.
So they're going hard on this working class thing.
Perfect manager
feeling this.
For Ryan Gauld.
Andiamo, baby.
Every Andiamo. I don't know if Gauld's going to be my MVP, but I am going to say it's going to be hard-pressed for anyone to put together a better MVP swag box that they should definitely send to us right here at the studio in East Harlem. hit up Anders for the address. If you, you know, if you would like to put your finger on the scale in the
we can
award
be
races.
Get your MVP vote.
We just did like a we read all this. We just like a 3-minute segment on this.
So yeah, first of all, like we do respect the effort that they're putting into all this. But also, look, we're a podcast that's trying to cover all 29 teams. And I think there are a lot of fans out there who don't understand how much fun it's been to watch Vancouver this year and how special a player, really the combo up top of Gold and White have been together. It's one of the best watches in MLS. So, you know, well done to the Caps PR folks for like trying to get this out there because he's a fun player, man.
There's nothing like a Vancouver Whitecaps MLS sicko special at 10:30. I mean, I just love it. It's so good. It's every time.
Dial it up.
I'm like, I should definitely go to sleep, but there's no shot in hell I'm going to sleep when these guys
Richie
are
Larea in the open field as
Come on.
Gotta do it. Got his first goal.
Richie Larea diving in the box. That is
How many it's not a dive? He suckers him in.
He does.
Yeah, how many Red Bulls fans you think are up watching Brian White and being like, God, we should have
when Brian White was talking about DPs that are like so selfish, I was like, oh, did you have any guys like that on the Red Bulls? Like, yeah. I don't remember.
It's a shot at Kaku, I guess.
Yeah, I don't remember anybody that particularly special in that position. But how about this? Best attacking duos, Gold and White. Who else would be in that conversation in MLS? Because there's a bunch of good ones. Steph, who would you take?
More recent one, I think you have to have, we're talking about MVPs, and I think pretty much for pretty much everybody, our front runner for MVP is Lucho Acosta. So I think you got to put Lucho in this conversation.
With
I would have said
now? With who?
Yeah, I would have said Vasquez maybe at the start of the season, but I'm going to say Aaron Bupenza. I think that combination has been fun to watch lately. They're coming into their own. They have a lot of chemistry. Bupenza kind of knows where Lucho wants him when he's trying to connect with him and vice versa as well, because we're seeing it both ways. We obviously Lucho just a second in the Golden Boot, and Bupenza, since he's arrived, I think just gotten better and better and better. And I think Lucho is a big part of that. And moving into the playoffs, I think that's the combination we need to look at. It's the top team in the league going into the playoffs. They need a duo like this. And I think that that's going to be the one.
Doyle?
It's also... It's like Stefano's, it's almost more theoretical at this point, but Cucho and Diego Rossi in Columbus. I'm not sure I would take them over Gold and White, but I think of those four players, Cucho is the best. Yeah. And no disrespect to Brian White or to Ryan Gold or to Diego Rossi, all of whom are fantastic players. But to me, Cucho is just like a half step above. And when he gets on the ball and also when he's off the ball, one of the most explosive players in the league. And we've seen over the past couple of weeks, he and Rossi starting to get on the same page a little bit more and sort of flowing out of that possession that Columbus always has into better attacking spots. And that has to be absolutely terrifying.
I saw that on the Rossi goal.
Yeah.
Against New England. It wasn't a, we have the ball in the final third, possession, movement. It was more of a counterattacking situation. But I remember with LAFC, Rossi was so effective stretching the line, being direct in behind, and he dropped in and was so patient. It wasn't like, I have to be in a hurry to get up the field, like full speed, full speed, full speed. He recognized space. He just kind of let the play develop around him, stayed in that little pocket, and once the ball got to him, just super efficient, calm, collected in the finish. That's a great sign for the Crew going forward. I'm going to go Almada and Yakumakis. I mean, these guys, Yakumakis, I'm shocked that he's not in the Golden Boot lead right now with the attitude he has. Now, well, Almada could have given him a PK last night.
Penalties.
Right. Yeah, he could have given it to him. He didn't do it. Diego Valeria was in the studio like, how could this happen? This cannot happen. They have to get Yakumakis going or else they're going to lose in the playoffs. But Thiago and Gigi are super legit. Kaylin, would you put anybody into this combo?
No, I'm actually going to stick with Gold and White. I know we kind of wax poetic on them because, you know, it's very rare now that we see even just teams playing with two strikers formations. Philly, Cincinnati, you know, and Vancouver are the teams I can think of. So it's and even when I think of those teams, it's like it really bases on the player right behind them. So it's Gazdag or it's Lucho Acosta. And this is different where it's really these two. And it's not as narrow as maybe the other options. Like there was a really nice goal. One of my favorite goals yesterday was between Carranza and Gozdag.
Oh, they so good.
The chest trap, and then he plays it back across to him. And he was basically acting as a second striker in that moment. But the way that these two, Gold and White specifically, have that understanding, Gold doesn't even look up sometimes. He just immediately whips in, knows exactly where White is going to be on that back post. So it's been a joy to watch. I think just based on the two of them, because Lucho, I could literally say Lucho and
Vasquez.
I could go Lucho and
Don Baggi. That's fair.
Yeah. Like Barrial, like he's just that special as a singular character that he makes everybody around him tick. Whereas I think this one's a little different as far as a duo.
The Lucho Don Baggi reference from Doyle was a birthday present for you, Jalen Carr. Happy birthday once again. Are the Sounders back? Or are they still flawed and they just got a late result?
But they're back-ish. I think everybody in the West is flawed, to be honest with you. And what I've been saying about the Sounders is that I trust these guys to flick the switch to on during this time of year and figure out how to start getting results and start winning games. And it's been a struggle. And I think in part, it's because there's no Raul Ruiz Diaz. He is injured. He was a late scratch before the weekend's game. And then he was in the hospital. He sent a Instagram story from the hospital, and then Brian Schmetzer said he's still in the hospital in a lot of pain. It was back spasms, and we're not sure exactly what else might be at play there. So it's Jordan Morris up top. They have Christian Roldan back on the wing, and thankfully for them, they have that because he was the late hero. Nico Ladero's gotten older. Leo Chu has kind of taken his opportunity, not perfectly, but like he's a contributor now. And Reed Baker Whiting and Obed Vargas and Josh Atencio, the kids, they're all contributors as well. But this core of this team is still Nico Ladero, Jao Paulo, Yaimar Gomez Andrade, and Stephen Fry, and Roldan and Morris. And those guys have been there through so much, and they've won so many big things. I just trust them. And I made this joke to Kalen on the match preview. It's like his old Dynamo teams. Like, yeah, in August, they look terrible. But then end of September into October, nobody wants to face them because they're not going to beat themselves. So they're going to limit chances. And then in those moments where they got you, they got you. Like, they're not going to turn that down. And I think that's what we saw at the very death from the Sounders last night, and they were a much better team than the Galaxy, and it took them a while, but they got there. And like, does anybody in the West, is anybody going to want to play the Seattle Sounders in the Western Conference? I don't think so.
No, even though they haven't been, it's still weird to me to look at them and see where they are in the standings, just because it's been such a weird year for them. Yeah. And you could clearly see, you mentioned Raul Ruiz Diaz just not even really being a whole lot available this season. It's just so weird to see, with all the things that they've gone through, it's more of a testament to what the Western Conference is, just because with everything they've gone through and some of the results, you look up, you're like, wow, this team's, they can't be up that high in the standings, but they've been there and they're in second now with the big win in midweek.
They have one thing, inconsistency that most other teams don't have in the West. Just even one thing consistent is more than everybody else. And that's, to Doyle's point, the foundation of the back line and goalkeeper. They just don't give up a ton of big chances.
Yeah.
And that'll keep you in games.
Second best defense in the league in terms of goals allowed. Best by the underlying metrics. And I would say by the eye test. Like, they just do a really good job of shutting it down. I mentioned it this morning on Twitter. Or X.
Twitter.
Jackson Reagan has, like, in the defensive player of the year discussion. I don't think he's going to win it. I still think it's probably Miazga, Robin Jansen, Ryan Hollingshead, Shaq Moore, but like Jackson Reagan's right there. Cause if he's not just a defensive rock, if you look at his numbers, and again, watch the games, he breaks lines with his passing and he moves the Sounders upfield into very good spots, in a way that there's not a lot of defenders in the league who do that.
But when they get to those spots, you were talking about who flips the switch. I mean, Roldan's the electrician. Like, his movement, his instincts for the game, his timing, all elevate literally everybody around him. And when he plays, it's not just like, oh, eye test. It's statistically, when Christian Roldan plays, this team's results, their underlying
it's
numbers.
It's like 2.4 points per game.
Everything
when he plays.
Just skyrockets.
Yeah.
And Roldan has been out with that concussion, and he had some very interesting quotes afterwards about, you know, just the difficulty of the recovery process for him. So it was awesome to see him get a goal, his first since June 10th, I believe, for this Sounders team. And if he's in the lineup and they got the rest of these guys, you know, Ruiz Diaz or no, maybe Morris and Leo Chu get their bromance going again. Like you said, Doyle, nobody wants to play this team in the playoffs. Do want to say congratulations to Jordan Morris and his wife. If you saw his celebration after his goal, the T, kissing the T in front of the camera, that's for baby Theo. He had his first child. So dad game, yeah. Represent. Congratulations to the Morrises. How about the West line? Somebody, anybody, convince me that somebody can jump from 10th, 11th, or 12th. That's Austin, Kansas City, Minnesota, all on 38 points into the playoff field. FC Dallas did not play on Wednesday night. Crazy, crazy weather in Frisco postponed the Dallas-Colorado match. Still don't have it. I don't think we have a date on that one yet, but I would assume in the international break. I mean, there's just really no other time to do it.
And worth noting, Jesus Ferreira was not called for the U.S. national team. Huge. So if it is during the international break, Dallas will have pretty close to their best 11. So I don't think they would say, no, push it back to Wednesday. They would probably say.
And Velasco not called into the Argentina side as well, so we'll have him.
Can anybody jump that line?
No one's jumping that line. If I have to pick one, I would say maybe Kansas City, but I still don't have any belief in any of those three, in any of Austin, Kansas City, or Minnesota to jump up into the playoff spots.
Yeah. Austin would have to win one game. They have two games left, Austin?
They got LAFC and...
So they would have to beat LAFC and then go to... or they could draw against LAFC and then go to San Jose on the final day and beat the Quakes. That would in hope that the Quakes lose next week against Dallas, or just hope that Dallas is, I don't think any of these teams can do it. I don't think any of these teams are good enough to do it.
How big of a failure is it for Minnesota to miss the playoffs? If they do, assuming they do, 4-5, 5-1, just whooping at the hands of LAFC after going up 1-0 in the fourth minute.
It's a failure for all of these teams, and we'll throw the Galaxy in as well. Like, we're talking about Austin, Kansas City, Minnesota, and the Galaxy. All four of these teams were built with the idea of competing this year. Minnesota, with the start they got off to, with Reynoso not available, to put them in that position, and then to just continually get worse over the course of the year. Even when Reynoso's doing a guy, he absolutely buried one of the LAFC defenders in the box yesterday to set up that goal in the fourth minute.
Yeah, Minnesota for me is by far the most disappointing of these teams. Galaxy have been ravaged by injuries. No Chicharito, Brugman, Caceres, Jalen Neal is a big one
because
he went out late. It's who's the right back? Caligari. Yes, yeah, so it's just been one after the next. And then Ricky Pooja has been out for this last little stretch as well. So it's like, I don't know.
They never had a chance.
What are you going to do, right? But Minnesota, as you mentioned, were without Reynoso, but we're in a good spot. They survived the first half of the season without Reynoso. Longwane emerged. He became, a really impact player, one of the most exciting, best productive wingers across the course of the season. Yes, Leagues Cup was a big part of that. But that's where you started to see at Leagues Cup, you saw, okay, the form, Longwane, now they add Puki, and you see how this might all fit together. You keep that defensive solidity that they've had, where they had to be more pragmatic without Reynoso. You add this to the mix, but it never clicked. And it wasn't because of Reynoso. That dude showed up like he was
as fit as ever.
Like, he just walked right on the pitch and was instantly the best player, one of the best 10s in the league. So that's the disappointing part, and the way it happened was the same story as this last match. They go up a goal, and then it collapses. This was a spectacular collapse, but it happened against Vancouver at home. Their home form has not been good at all. They've continued to drop points at home. So I think out of the teams, that's by far the biggest disappointment, because it's a team that I thought, even if they just got in the playoffs, could make some noise. So to be able to be sitting on the outside looking in after all that, I think is a huge disappointment.
Minnesota fans are feeling it. No doubt about it. Big stretch coming here. It truly is existential for these teams as far as playoff hopes. And we know what comes with missing the playoffs. It gets existential for everybody else. So feeling the pressure in Minnesota, in Kansas City, in Austin, all the way down. That's the flip side of 9 teams making the playoffs. We've joked about, hey, are 8 and 9 true playoff teams, or they play in teams that have to earn their way into the playoffs? Well, everybody else is looking around being like, oh, it was so easy to make it, and yet here we are.
Right.
What's that say about us? So, hard times on both sides.
I think you're going to hear from all four of these teams, you're going to hear a lot about injuries. I think that's going to be, because like Austin, they were playing Alex Ring at center back throughout part of the year. And KC, of course, were without their DP9 and DP10 to start the season. Minnesota lost a million guys in central midfield, especially Robin Lund to injury. And I think,
I mean, the initial part of Reynoso, I know they like, hey, we fared it well.
Yeah.
But still, that's a built-in reasoning. You could call it excuse, whatever it is, of like, hey, we didn't have our guy. It wasn't the back really
half,
on us.
But it's the back half of the season right. that let them
No, I don't right. disagree exactly. at all.
Because it was all like, they went out and they got Timu Pukki. And he's been pretty good, yeah. you know, and they got Reynoso back. And they had Bongi on a heater through League's Cup, and they weren't able to take that and spin it forward and become a two-way team that actually controls games a little bit. Like, it all had to be through Reynoso, or it wasn't going to happen. And even if it did happen, they might give up five.
That central midfield, like them missing all those players in central midfield, I think ultimately is what kind of has put them in this position, because, like I said, they're getting production from those guys, from Pukki, from Reynoso. I know Bongi hasn't been as good as of late, but I mean, he still can contribute, and we've seen it do it. By the way, nobody says Bongi's name better than your boy Callum Williams. His full name is just perfect. I'm not even going to try to say it, but he crushes it.
Can I just say that David Goss has gotten wind of the working class MVP Ryan Gauld gift box from the exotic locale he is currently enjoying himself, and his direct quote here is, effing stop.
He has been on this train all season.
He is seeing the wonders of the world, and he is still locked in on Mathieu Chouinard and a working class MVP hat for Ryan Gauld. East playoff line, the Fire, we talked about them. They've risen from the dead. Meanwhile, Miami has probably replaced them in the grave. Anybody think Miami are going to make it?
No.
No, probably not.
That loss lot, the loss to Chicago, just, I mean, I know they're not mathematically eliminated, but I mean, it's a long shot at this point.
Yeah, if they win out, they have a chance. But
have a chance, right? Yeah. But they have to.
12 players on international break. One of those Charlotte games is during the international break. It just feels like there's sort of this mass pushing up against them, whether it be the Messi injury or the little unlucky moments that were all coming up Miami. You know, NYCFC, that ending there where they probably should have got a game winner but banged the crossbar, just kind of feels like the luck has evaporated a little bit. So who makes the final two spots in the meantime? Right now, Chicago at 8 on 40 points. Montreal, by virtue of their late draw on 38 points, tiebreaker over NYCFC. DC as their final game to be played at the end of this weekend. I'm putting them outie. Don't think they got a chance. Red Bulls kept it alive by beating Cincy. Charlotte are sitting around saying, we got three games to play. I think why not us? We could get this done. Who are the final two for you, Kalen?
Not sure. Yeah.
Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. I'm not sure it matters either, because I think Cincinnati are going to handle whoever comes through. And I think that's a good thing. I have been a part of a few teams that have snuck in the playoffs. And if you win that knockout round, I've always felt that was an advantage in the past, where you've played do or die playoff game. At the time I was playing, it was home and away. And if you were the lower seed, you'd start at home. So you've already won a playoff game. You have a home game against a team that's had a break. So if you win that game, say 2-0, because, you know, it was away goals matter, you know, the aggregate score mattered, you were in a good spot, and you're putting teams under pressure at that point. I think with the shift to the home away home this year, it's going to get rid of a lot of that advantage, where maybe a team comes in the knockout round and the wild card and is able to win a match and then has to play a game and you're already in buzzing or whatever. But you're going to Cincinnati. I know Red Bull was able to sneak one, you know, through the crack there.
I'm not counting that as anything. It started to push. Not even playoff in the general region.
Yeah. So tell me, for example, Red Bull happens to sneak in as the, say I go on a limb and say Red Bull's going to get the ninth spot, and then they're going to go to Cincinnati and have to play at Cincinnati, then back to Red Bull, where they've already lost to Cincinnati once this year, and then potentially have to go back again. I do think it would be an intriguing matchup, just because you saw how physical that matchup was before, and same thing earlier in the season where, you know, this was sort of like a celebration victory lap game for Cincinnati, but it still turned into a red card and a bunch of yellow cards and Lucho Acosta standing over people. So that part is intriguing, but ultimately I think with the playoff format this year, I feel a little different in the West. If a Portland is in one of those spots and is playing a team and they're in form, that's where I could maybe see a little bit more of, you know, an opportunity for an upset, but I don't see it so much in this Eastern Conference.
This is going to sound, we had somebody review us and say, these guys are just mean. So this might sound a little bit mean. Mm. I'm hoping for the play-in games to be chaos, like basically two mediocre teams just wailing on each other. Like, please do not play for any sort of draws. Do not play conservatively.
That's different than the way you described it last time as a slap fest.
Yeah, no, that works too, like a slap fest. Yeah, neither of them can knock each other out. They're just sort of, you know, entertaining us and then just get worked by the first seed. I want those playing.
You games. Want vindication for
the... I just want the regular season and the quality shown in the regular season to shine in the biggest moment. I want the best teams to move on, to have the best series going forward.
Wow, so you just...
I want home field advantage to matter.
You listed like 15 teams you hate. That's what I just heard, Andrew Wiebe.
No, I don't hate them.
I just want half the league.
I just want them to get, you know,
that is into the really dust. Mean.
So mean. I think it's Chicago and NYCFC.
Angry fans, Andrew Wiebe.
Yeah, like this.
I think you're right because if you look at the last couple of games, Chicago have Charlotte at home. I don't think Charlotte can go on the road and win a big game. So three more points for Chicago. That puts them at 43. That means they're probably safe. NYCFC, their final two games are at DC United, who looked absolutely dead and buried last night. And then they host Chicago on decision day.
It's a big one.
I think they get 4 points out of that. 4 points is probably enough.
Montreal has...
I'd keep Montreal in this one.
Montreal has Portland at home. And who do they finish off the season with?
They finish away
on the road.
Yeah, I'm tossing Montreal right out.
Yeah, I think NYC jumps them for that.
I mean, famous final
NYCFC words. Are right. Unbeaten in six. They have four shutouts. Like, they are playing the best ball of any of the teams chasing this playoff line. They were above the playoff line entering last night. I tend to think that Weeby's fan fiction of what's going to happen against any of these teams against Cincinnati
Taylor cruelty
is going to play out. And I'm fine with that as well. I just think Cincy is a much better team than any of these.
Let's get to real quick the Pat Noonan quotes. Speaking of Cincy, you probably saw them. They made the rounds. It's an ongoing conversation on this podcast for years and years and years. What is the significance of the supporters' shield versus MLS?
Oh, here we go.
Oh, we've got a victory
we're getting
lap.
Getting a victory lap from Matt Doyle.
Doyle's got the victory lap. Because here's the quote. Just keep going, you know, punching the air, etc. Doyle, I'll read the quote from Pat Noonan. Quote, I think it has now surpassed the Shield MLS Cup in terms of relevancy.
Let's go!
Relevancy! That's not to take away the desire for our team to hold an MLS Cup trophy.
Kalen, any
what
comment?
What say you, Kalen? Pat Noonan, and by extension, Dom Kinnear, saying that the Shield is more relevant than MLS Cup.
Mm. Should we play some funeral music over this for Kalen?
I appreciate the sentiment. I would be curious if I were to go there and offer Pat Noonan MLS Cup and say, you can have this one, but you got to give back
straight up
that one.
We'll trade you straight up.
I would be interested to see what his response would be there. Something tells me he might feel that way, but when the trophy's in front of him,
he's holding the cup because they have the desire to hold it.
He's a Revs guy, so he's terrified of holding it.
Oh man,
he was on the 2012 LA Galaxy team that did win MLS
Cup.
That's
right, so, I forgot. Yeah,
he does have a chip. So, I think the Shield is definitely growing in significance and relevancy, and it matters. You know, it really is. You can see, I mean, first and foremost, I think from the supporters, but then I think, and Doyle has done a good job of putting voice to that over the years, but I think also from the players, because that really was not a conversation in my years. Like, if you were to talk about relevancy, if you were to tell me like do I remember the 2012 San Jose Earthquakes? We're able to, you know, the Goonies. I remember the Goonies being fun. I remember them being dangerous. Wando, Linehart.
I remember them being champions.
Okay. I remember the Galaxy being champions because I lost them in the final, right? They did back-to-back and David Beckham and Landon Donovan and Robbie Keane. So history kind of tells a different story. And I still think that's the same thing where I think the Shield makes Cup even better. So what LAFC did last year where I felt the two were connected. I felt that the Galaxy or LAFC needed to win the Shield, and that push down the final stretch to sort their team out when they hadn't been playing well, just to survive and win that, push them on to end up winning MLS Cup. And now they're going to be remembered as one of the best teams, because not many teams have ever done that. But I've also seen it where it goes the other way, where teams have to push to the very end of the season, like Philadelphia in the past, or Red Bull in the past, where they've pushed and won on the final day, but then ultimately lost.
Revs, I think you'd throw in.
Revs, absolutely. Yeah. 21, right? Like, that was a killer. They had a three-week break, which didn't help, and NYCFC went up there and took care of business. But, you know, I think at some point, the Shield has almost been a detriment to winning MLS Cup, and it's hard to win the Shield. But I think if you gave me the opportunity between the two, and I think almost everybody, not everybody, but I feel it's amongst the players at least, Cup is still what you want. That's the way our system, that's the way the history, the culture, all that is. But I am also have come way more in the other direction of big respect to the Shield. I'm happy to see Doyle take his victory lap.
It's magnanimous of you.
I don't know if it is the more relevant of the trophies.
Do you think that a lot of the international players that have now flooded this league feel the same way? Because I feel like in all the leagues that they're coming from, supporter Shield, which is the league champion, and that's how they've grown up, and that's how they've seen this, and this is a full season award. I'm kind of on your end here, Doyle. I'm kind of with you here. I obviously everyone wants to win MLS Cup. I mean, that's what you want, but I feel like it really does have, this can change as far as how you view this. I mean, I feel like fans who were born watching American sports, mm-hmm, are going to say, yeah, you got to win MLS Cup. You got to go through the playoffs. Fans who have grown up watching soccer from around the world will tend to say, hey, this supporter.
But it can also change from a player's perspective, yes, too. Diego Valeri was just on the show last week. Said MLS Cup was, yep, the trophy. So I think
to be fair, you know, Diego's got cups. He doesn't have shields, and right, Nunes got a shield.
You know, he's from Argentina, right? Grew up there. That's, yep, the way the system. He's, you know, he's played in, and then he's come here. And the part that stood out, which rings true to me, is it's a different thing. Like, to have to play in a match where you play an MLS Cup final, and that's it. Like, yep, it's just for
it's
that
a final. Yeah,
it's a final, and the pressure is different. And that's a big part of the intrigue and the can LAFC get over the hump? Can Philadelphia do it? Like, that's a big part of the story of, can we actually see Messi lifting the trophy? Leagues Cup was like that too. It adds that extra, like, little bit of pressure that we're, I think, regardless of culture or wherever you're from, definitely still hits. So I don't know. I think the international point is good, but I think a lot of players adjust to kind of what the system is.
Yeah. So to the international point, I think it's, I mean, a lot of leagues in South America have playoffs.
Yes.
I know that's changed a little bit in recent years, but so, like, it's not a foreign concept to guys who are coming here. I think everyone could see both, right? And that's, I don't think relevant is the right word. I think that if Pat Noonan had to redo that interview, he maybe would have chosen representative as a word. And to me, that's what the Shield is. It is better. It is more representative, yes, of who the best team in MLS is in any given season. This year, no matter what happens in the playoffs, it's FC Cincinnati, yeah, period. Now, to Kalen's point, if you want to be remembered as one of the all-time greats, go win both. Go win both. That's, like, that is what is at stake now for Cincinnati. They're not just chasing another piece of hardware. They're not just chasing their first MLS Cup. They're chasing a spot in the inner circle of the greatest MLS teams of all time. Mm-hmm. And MLS Cup, even on its own, is more relevant than the Shield, I think, for the greater discussion, but it's not more representative. And since they've checked that first box, and now they took a loss yesterday, and they looked like a team that was a little hungover in terms of having just won a title. They get right this weekend, maybe give Lucho a game off, get everyone together again for decision day, get, you know, some miles on those legs together, and get focused going into the postseason. I think they will enter this postseason bigger favorites to whatever happens over the next two games. I think they will enter this postseason bigger favorites to win MLS Cup than LAFC were last year.
But that's the positive for me, is the two trophies are feeling more connected.
Yeah.
Where you're starting to see teams that win the Shield have a better chance of winning Cup. And before in the past, you go through the list of Shield winners and Cup winners, and every once in a while, but pretty sporadically, there's a hit. Whereas more recently, it feels, at least as far as title challengers, you're seeing Toronto, Atlanta, LAFC, trying to think of some others that have recently, at least been New England, at least been in the mix. It hasn't always panned out, but I do think they're getting closer to being, because I agree, Cincinnati for me is the favorite.
All right, let's talk Eastern Conference, and we'll hit the seeding side of things right now. Interestingly enough, if the playoffs started today, all the matches sort of in that middle part of the East, 2 through 7, would be the same as they were Wednesday night. We would get Orlando, Nashville in the 2-7 game. Orlando won in Nashville. We'd get Philly, Atlanta in the 3-6. We'd get Columbus, Revs in the 4-5. Then Cincy would be awaiting Chicago or Montreal or whoever the heck finds their way into that play-in game. We had a mail from Rainbow Tech 99. What's the best round one matchup if the postseason started today? Cascadia in the West, it would be Sounders Timbers. That's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Pretty good. Yeah.
Boy, Anders has got to be nervous about that one. Best is best overall or best in the West?
I think the entire postseason bracket. And when I say best, you can define that however you want, but in my mind, it would be most competitive and most entertaining.
It's hard to go against Columbus, New England. Those are two high scoring teams that, generally speaking, want the ball. Columbus, we've raved about them all year. The, you know, most attractive team in the league to watch. The Revs aren't quite at that level, but Carlos Hill can take any game and turn it into a work of art.
Tomas Chunkalai looks like he's great. Coming. Incredibly good signing.
And you have the added discussion of the Revs getting used to a new coach and kind of a new system under Clint PA as well, and that being another thing to watch in this one. So that would be my choice. Yeah,
give me Atlanta, Philly, no doubt about it. Philly and sort of, I'm not going to say the last of this window, but what could be, depending on the transfer window in the winter with Carranza and both the fullbacks and everything else going on with them, maybe even Glesnes against the team in Atlanta that has huge expectations, but I'd underperformed them significantly before the summer. And now we're on the come up. Almada, Gigi, Sean De Silva, Miles Robinson, maybe in his last hurrah.
I read that game different. I read that as a pretty convincing win for Philadelphia, where I felt that they proved they were at a different level than Atlanta yesterday. I know they were able to climb back late, but I felt like that was not really indicative of the way the match went. And I felt Philly proved to me more that this is going to be a team that is going to have a real, you know, you talk about home away home, like street fights, all that. You don't want to go to Chester twice, I think, back to back in that. So if I were to pick one here, I'd probably go LAFC Houston in the West, 3-6, if it holds as of
Dale,
today.
Dale.
Houston beat LAFC. They played actually back to back earlier the season, home and away, and Houston won both.
Both.
And they switched the tactics Olsen did, where at home they played with the ball. Dominated possession, went on the road to LAFC, were much more compact, hit on the counterattack, were able to press them. So it was, that would be a good matchup, I think, for Houston, the way that they saw things early. But I think Houston they haven't done themselves any favors dropping points these last couple. I know Open Cup took some out, but losing that goal, they had an opportunity to try to push for a top four spot. They're still right on the edge of it, 45 points. And it's so tight in the Western Conference still, but I like that one.
That happened.
Oh, that's my wife calling me.
You have now. To be like 900 years old to have any sound ever emit.
Well, it's phone. It's because it came through the computer and had my sound up.
You don't
here.
Have you.
I don't have any excuses. You know, I'd like to be reachable for the most important people in my life. And
Weeby's first time in a studio.
I've had to decline that one this time around. Let's talk Orlando through a different lens, because it was a huge win for them in Nashville. The best road team in MLS. They haven't lost at home since, I want to say, April. They're on a heater. And they're getting into a point where it's like, well, you know, outside of Cincinnati, this might be the best bet that we have to go to MLS Cup. But I want to go through a different lens, and that is the most underrated player in MLS. And I'm going to shout out Wilder Cartagena and Cesar Araujo.
You get Araujo. Two players?
And yeah, I get to it. It's the way this show works.
Yeah, yeah.
I get to list them.
Are we sure it's Araujo?
Araujo.
Araujo.
Yeah,
because yeah, Araujo was the Brazilian
pronunciation. Araujo is the Brazilian.
My underrated.
And so you're able Araujo. To as the Argentinian, you could give us the Uruguayan pronunciation.
Yes, yes. It's basically the same.
Okay.
Anyway, that was an L from me on the pronunciation front, but both these guys deserve so much credit for setting the tone. Physically, they're not really chance creators as far as possession goes, but they're super efficient. And they don't lose the ball in bad spots, and they find a way to get it to Mauricio Pereira or to Angulo or to Facu Torres or to Ojeda or whoever is in there on any given day in moments to be special. And they just don't get beat easily through the middle. And with them and Robin Jansen and then whoever plays next to Jansen, Antonio Carlos made his return after a long time out against Nashville. Like, that is the sort of spine and base on which to build an MLS Cup winner, I think. And those guys are...
Did you just predict that Orlando's going to win MLS?
No, I said a base that could win MLS. Could.
You didn't say could.
Yeah, could. Yeah, I mean, that was implied.
Okay.
But, you know. Can I shout out Fabian Herbers as well to just complete my list? We didn't even say his name once in the Chicago Fire discussion. He was on fire when they won before League's Cup, and he had 2 assists last night.
Okay.
Underrated.
Didn't see that coming.
Stefano, who do you got?
We talked about him earlier. Christian Roldan. We said it. He kind of just does... He does so much of the work for Seattle. We know how good they've been defensively, and he is on both ends of the pitch doing the job for Seattle. He comes back. Having him back right before MLS Cup playoffs is what's going to make Seattle a team that no one wants to play. We know that offensively they've had their issues, and you know, they're kind of piecing things together with Raul not being there. Defensively, they've been great, and with Roldan just adds a whole nother mix to them. Having that confidence, having that experience, and after him missing the games with the concussions, it's just like a feel-good story, but also a guy who I don't think we don't really talk about a whole lot, right? And he is so important to what Seattle has done, not just this year, but what they've done in recent years. And I think that getting him back right before MLS Cup playoffs is going to be massive for
typical
the Seattle
team. Sounders timing in that
yeah.
regard.
Do you think they're the favorites in the West?
It's difficult because... I do, and I'll say why, because I think in the MLS Cup playoffs, you need to have a solid defense, and they have that already. They've had it all year long, and I think that can push and take a team a long way. Do I think they have enough firepower to compete? It's going to be tough. I think LAFC is still a team that can score a lot more goals, but Seattle, I think defensively, makes them a favorite just because of how good they are at that end.
All right, David. Anders, you see that he didn't even mention St. Louis, so please clip that segment and make sure you hashtag it with St. Louis fans.
Send it to them and put it on their...
Oh, well, Kaelin,
we all picked them.
Give us your underrated player.
Very low in the Western Conference.
Now I want to pick two.
Of course. You know I'm not sending
it. Okay, I had Artur down.
That's a good show.
Yeah, that midfield for Houston has been the strength. Coco Carrasquilla, I think it rightly has gotten a lot of the plaudits, as Hector Herrera, of course, has had a best 11 type season, missed their last game. But if you look at some of these big moments, I mean, he had a goal last night, Artur, of course, but that's not really what he's there for. But the assist to Griffin Dorsey in U.S. Open Cup final, he's sneaking these moments to get more advanced positions, but generally is really protecting and connecting between the two or between the three of them. And even when Ben Olsen talks about resetting or reestablishing the winning mentality, they went out and got guys that had won trophies, MLS Cup. Artur has done that. A number of guys, Escobar, you know, you go across the line, Steve Clark, guys that had been in finals, been in big moments. But Artur for me has been kind of the bridge between, you know, the way they play, the way they connect, and he's been clutch for them. So, but then the other one I have staying in Texas is Nkosi Tafari.
Good call.
I think he's been really good defensively on a team that is needed to be defensively resolute. He's gotten some goals, of course, which help if you're trying to win any awards or get attention. But somehow, even with the goals, he hasn't still maybe caught enough. So I still put him in that underrated category. I think he's been really good this year.
Doyle, give me an underrated player.
The first one who came to mind was Andres Kubas, who we've already talked about in this one. And I am really knocking on wood for our friends in Vancouver that that he is okay down the stretch, because Kubas is borderline irreplaceable, doing all the stuff that Caitlin was rightly praising Artur for. I think Kubas does all of that stuff for Vancouver and maybe even covers a little bit more ground because Vancouver aren't quite as compact defensively as Houston are. He is a fantastic player that I don't think a lot of folks know about or understand what he does. I'm going to say in Vancouver, Brian White, he's got 15 goals. He leads the league in expected goals. This is, I think, the third time in his career that he is up above double digits. If you look at his career numbers, he scores a goal about 100 every 160 minutes or so. He doesn't take PKs. That goal he scored last night where he took a touch and got out on the run. And that was like a Landon Donovan finish 1v1 where it's like
a little scoop, slows like down, English. Little
scoop. Yeah. Like puts the keeper on his backside mm-hmm. first. And then like, I did not know that. I've been the Brian White fan for a longest time. I had no idea that was in his bag. He scores goals by drifting to the back post and finding little areas of space. And I was going to say that when we were talking about the partnership between him and Gault, but also he buries guys in the air. Like he will get up and outbody a guy and outjump a guy and bury you. He is like the underlying numbers love him and people kind of almost treat it as like a meme that he's up there among the golden boot leaders. And if he took penalties, he would probably be leading the golden boot race. And it's actually like, if you look at him play and you look at the underlying numbers, he's been like, he's basically Georgios Giakoumakis. And Giakoumakis is a Greek international DP. And it like, everybody's like, yeah, he's amazing. It's like Brian White's basically been the same player and people treat it like it's kind of a joke. And I think it's because the Red Bulls, well, first of all, it's because he's a 4-year college player. Guys like that don't get the pub, understandably, right?
Because oh, by the way, congratulations to Duncan McGuire.
Yep.
Joining a hallowed list of six. Can you name the other 5 first-year college players that have scored double digits?
Damani Rolfe.
Yep.
Pat Noonan.
Yep.
Did it in the same year. Kyle Lahren, 2015. Jordan Morris, 2016. Who am I?
This is the tough one.
I think I got it.
Yeah, go for it.
Will Bruin?
Nope. This is the tough one. Colorado Rapids.
Oh, DeSean Brown, 2010. DeSean
Brown. 2011. Yep, right in there.
Yeah. Or maybe it was 2013. Another guy who was drafted by Oscar Pereja, it needs to be said. Yeah,
speaking of drafts, can I give you this update from our guy, Grant Peterson, who emailed on Thursday morning at 1:18 a.m.
Oof. Wow.
With a bunch of really comprehensive Excel documents, including all of our preseason predictions in one place. What an absolute saint Grant Peterson is. And the updated Golden Boot draft. I know this is legit, Anders, just in case you think this is not, because he has Golden Boot, then in parentheses, non-snake. So he was locked in. The Fighting David Gosses are 3 goals back of the evil empire of Kalen Carr and Tom Bogert. 92-89, those 3 goals, the difference coming from Denny Bawanga, who Kalen didn't even know was on his team
earlier. That's how good we got it.
So surprised to find out that they indeed
have
Denny Bawanga.
Well done, Tom.
Shocking.
Rest in peace to your guys, group chat. If Tom Bogert wins this, I just feel
that's why we're rooting hard against him.
Exactly.
Not against Kalen. Like we like Kalen and we like Tom too. Just certain versions of Tom are better than others. Eric Michael Murphy hit us up. Roster and formation choices by DC United in the future of Wayne Rooney and Dave Casper. That was a topic. DC have 1 game left. They may be out of the playoffs and just sit and watch.
I think even if they win this game this weekend, I don't think they're going to.
They're not guaranteed.
Playoffs.
Yeah. This is we're talking. We used existential many times in the show. This is the future of the club at stake. Wayne's out of contract. It's clearly not working, at least the way they had hoped. Christian Benteke has been good, but outside of that,
they have good pieces. Been decent. Right? Christian Benteke has been good. I think you can hope for another 2 years out of him. Ted Cudipietro, the young Brazilian number 10 they got, whose name I'm blanking at, Pirani, that they got during this. He's a good piece going forward. Chris Durkin has had some nice moments. Kleek has had some nice moments. I think there's some stuff here. there doesn't seem to be a unifying vision. It feels like half of this was Dave Casper and half of this was Wayne Rooney. Rooney has been weirdly reluctant to play most of the young players, even when veterans have been.
Which was like the whole thing that you thought he was supposed to carry over from Derby County as well.
Yeah. And also Hugo Perez is out of a job.
Look, offseason is coming quick for some teams. Playoffs are coming for others. Decisions will be made and there'll be more news to cover on this podcast. Thank you so much for listening along with us. Hope David Goss is having just a wonderful time on vacation. All the best meals, all the best moment, everything great for my guy.
That was called Kashari, that video of the meal with pasta and chickpeas and fried onions that he had in Cairo. And I had forgotten about it as a dish, but it was something that my my Lebanese grandmother used to make kashari for us 40 years ago now. Yeah, that looked good.
Well, he's got all the kashari he wants, but he doesn't have the working class MVP, Ryan Gold.
That's true, but there's a box full of those hats. Remember, hit up Anders, anybody from anywhere that wants to send us literally anything. Thank you, Connor Close, for the Orca hat. All right, happy birthday to Kaylin Carr. We're out of here. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. Adios.